Tamil, everybody. Thank you, sir.
Hi, folks. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Tom. Where do you begin at, eh? I guess I begin at the beginning. I was born into a large family in 1950. There were 12 kids. Today, nine out of 12 are self-admitted alcoholics. Two of them died from the disease a short while ago, within 2 years. My old man was a drunk. All my uncles were drunk. Most of them died as a result of alcohol. Anyway, in my young life, I suffered a lot of abuse, physical, emotional, spiritual, verbal, anything you could want to get, right? So I grew up being very, what would you call it, hyper-vigilant. I had to know where everybody was at all the time in order to feel safe, get away from them. I was pretty much a loner. Anyway, I discovered alcohol when I was 15 years old. I got some beer with another couple of guys, and I got the lion's share of it, and I got drunk on 3 bottles of beer. But it was the best feeling I ever had in my life up to that point, and probably after. I didn't feel angry anymore. Didn't want to kill anybody. Didn't want to fight with anybody. I just wanted to be happy. And I was for a short while. Well, I got home and my mother caught me with a junk of wood. Anyway, from the time I was 15 till I was 29, I drank every chance I got. And that was quite a few chances. By the time I was 18 years old, I was blacking out regularly. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd have a bloody shirt and a bloody nose, and wondering where in the hell I was the night before, and couldn't remember until I met up with the guys later on, and they told me how crazy I was the night before in the bar room fighting and whatnot. Anyway, when I was 21, I got married, and my drinking stopped for a while. I didn't completely stop, but it slowed way down. I was more interested in other things at that time. And got married, had a daughter born in 72. And in 1974, my drinking had picked up again. I was going to the bars regularly on my way home from work, showing up at home drunk, a few things like that. One day in 1974, in March or February or something, we had a big snowstorm in St. John's, Newfoundland, where I lived at. And I went out to shovel the sidewalk. And the next day, I was walking down the sidewalk in Toronto. I had gotten drunk, got thirsty, went to the bar, got drunk, went home, had a fight with my wife, got some money, and went out drinking again. And next morning, I was ashamed of myself, ashamed to go home. So I went to the airport and jumped on the plane and went to Toronto. She discovered she was pregnant shortly afterwards again, and she came to Toronto. And in Toronto for the next 6 or 7 years, I drank every chance I got. I was making a lot more money than I was in Newfoundland. I had extra money in that rate, and I drank quite frequently. Got into some scrapes in the bars and whatnot, and ended up with assault charges and stuff like that for a while. I never spent any time in jail there. Ended up either being on probation or getting off or something like that, right? Anyway, in 1978, I was on my way to work. I was working the afternoon shift, and I went into a bar. I had $2, and I ordered up a couple of draft beers and sat on the table, and I looked at them, and I thought, if I drink them, I'm going to be just as bad as my old man was. And I started to cry, thinking about it. And I was absolutely powerless over alcohol in that moment. I picked up those 2 glasses of beer and I drank them. And the next year was almost a complete blackout. I I fucking drank more than I ever drank. Drink at work, drink at home, drink wherever I was. If I didn't have the money to buy it, I'd steal it. Anyway, in 1979, I came out of a blackout, and I was in Queen Street Mental Health Center, which is a psychiatric hospital, on the lockdown ward. And anyway, when I was in there, I'd never ever heard tell of Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I was in there, I heard about it over the loudspeaker. And there was a guy in there, he was a Skid Row alcoholic. And he took me off one day and we went, he got a bottle of rubbing alcohol and some Pepsi. He told me to get a ginger ale and we went in the back alley and he told me, as he mixed the drink, he said, "Tommy, you can't have any of this." He said, "Because I think this just might be your problem with the alcohol." And he'd say that to me, and then he told me about his brother who was sober for 26 years. He lived in Nova Scotia, and he hung out with a bunch of crazy bastards in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he used to repeat to me every time he mixed a drink, "Tommy, you can't have any of this because I think this might be your problem." Anyway, I got out of that hospital, and I went back to work. I think it was probably a process of 6 or 7 months I hadn't had a drink. I had gained quite a bit of knowledge while I was in the hospital around alcohol and stuff like that and drugs. And I knew fully well that it was alcohol and drugs to a lesser degree that had put me in that state that I ended up in a psych ward. Anyway, I did that and about 6, 7 months, as I said, and I went to a union meeting one day, and there was a bar. The meeting was on the third floor. The bar was in the middle floor. And as I passed the bar, I had this thought, well, maybe if I have 2 beers, I never went for one. It was always 2. Maybe if I have 2 beers, I can tell those fuckers what I think of them today. And I went into that bar, and I had 2 bottles of beer. And the next morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, I was in handcuffs, getting taken out of my own residence and taken off to the lockup for the night because I was disturbing the peace. And I stayed drunk then for another 4 or 5 months. And the wife kicked me out and I went and I lived in a bar upstairs. They had room to rent. I rented a room and my routine was I'd go to work, drink at work all day, go home, go to the bar after work, drink some more there until around 8 or 9 o'clock and stagger upstairs and fall asleep. Get up next morning, go do the same thing again. I was like that for 4 or 5 weeks. And then my brother and a friend of mine came to the rescue. He got me out of that place. He talked my wife into me going back home and if I didn't drink. And then I went to a 28-day treatment center in Toronto at the Addiction Research Foundation. And it was a good program. I liked it. I got a lot out of it. It was psychologically based. They weren't too much on AA. Had to attend 2 AA meetings and then report back to the group what we thought of it. I did that. But what I was doing was the whole time I was in there, was a residence program, so he had to stay there, but we were allowed out at night for a couple of hours to go to a meeting. I'd go home, smoke 2 joints, and then go back to the treatment center. They never did catch me, but as a matter of fact, in that center, sometimes during the course, one of the counselors said, if none of this works, smoke a joint, right? Don't take a drink. And I did that without them having to tell me. Anyway, after that program, I stayed sober for, I didn't stay sober, I stayed dry for about 2.5, 3 years, but I didn't go to AA because I wasn't that bad as those 2 speakers I had heard. Anyway, I was 2.5, almost 3 years off it, and then I got drunk, and I stayed drunk for 6 months. And after 6 months, I decided that I got to do something. I can't go on like this. One of the memories I have from that 6 month period is on a Saturday morning, I come home and I don't know where my car is. I found it the next day. It was in the parking lot somewhere. I left it, but I was out drinking all night with some friends or buddies or whatever. And when I came home, I got a taxi home. I got out of the taxi. I couldn't stand up. And I crawled in my driveway on my hands and knees. And I met my daughter, who was 10 years old, and my son, who was 8 years old, coming out of the parking lot. As they were coming out my driveway, I was crawling in on my hands and knees, and they had two friends with them. I don't know why I remember that. I didn't remember nothing else about that night, but I remember that very clearly, and it haunted me. And about 6 weeks later, I decided I had to do something. So I went to AA. I went to a meeting on a Wednesday night, and I was pretty crazy when I went there, right? I called up, well, let's back up a little bit there. I'd started a new job, and there was only like six people working at this little factory. And the first day I was there, I was out in the parking lot shoveling a load of crushed stone around with another guy. And the guy says to me, do you drink? I said, occasionally. He said, I don't drink. I'm an alcoholic. I go to AA. And I said, well, that's fine. I'm an alcoholic. I don't go to AA, so don't fucking tell me about it. And that was it with him, right? Anyway, at this particular time when I was drinking with my son and my daughter, and that a week or two later, I'm at work, and he got his car out there, and he's got a meeting book in there, and he's got the 12 and 12 in his car. So I stole his meeting book. And when I went home, I looked up meetings and then I called up AA, and they told me it was a big book discussion meeting on Wednesday night at this church. And it was very close to me. So anyway, I sat there and I was thinking, well, I should take a book with me as a boss of a big book meeting. What, wonder what you mean by the big book? And I looked on the bookshelf, and the two biggest books were there was a Bible and a cookbook. I said, I wonder which one I'll take with me. I didn't take neither one anyway. I went to that meeting, and I felt pretty good there. I felt pretty comfortable. It was a discussion meeting. People shared some of the stuff they were going on in that, right? And I went home. The next evening, I told my wife. I said, I went to an AA meeting last night. She looked at me and she said, what in the fuck did you go there for? You're not an alcoholic. You'll be all right if you just stay home and drink, right? Instead of going out. I'm like, oh, well, here we go. In my head, I'm going, now I don't have to go to AA. I can go to the beer store now and get some more, right? As long as I drink at home. Anyway, I made up my mind that I was going to do that. I was sat at the kitchen table. My son came out of the TV room and come over. He sat on my lap and he said, Daddy, I'm so glad you went to AA last night. And I said, why? And he said, because I was done sick of seeing you drunk. And he got up and he went off back into the TV room. I got up and I went off to an AA meeting. And I, for the next 20 years or so, I went to AA meeting a lot. I got very active in the program. Done all the service positions, starting with making the coffee and mopping the floor, dumping the ashtrays, and cleaning up after people. In my early sobriety at that time, now before I lose myself here, I'm going to say, I got sober I started my recovery in 1979 when I was in that mental health institute. That's where I first heard of it and first realized I had a problem and had a desire to do something about it. I am presently been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 40 years or so. And my dry date, my sobriety date, is February the the 17th, I was going to say 1970, 2020, when I was 70 years old on my birthday, 16th of February, I had my last drink then. So I had a couple of relapses there. But for the first time I was in AA, it was over 20 years before I had a relapse. And when I got really active in AA, things began to happen in my life. Right? I would go to this meeting, and I was probably 6 or 8 weeks going there every Monday night, plus I'm going to other meetings in between. I met every day pretty well. And this Monday night, I went into the meeting, and the same four guys came running at me, almost like, and their questions were, have you got a big book? Have you got the 12 and 12? Have you got 24-hour-a-day bunk? Have you got a sponsor? Have you got phone numbers? And in my head, I'd be screaming, go fuck yourself. Fuck off and leave me alone. But I didn't say that. I just listened to them and didn't say anything. So this night I went there and I said to myself, fuck this, I'm getting out of here. Enough of this fucking shit. So I turned around and I walked out, go out the door. And the two guys that were greeters on the door, one of them turned to the other one and said loud enough that I could hear, if a newcomer was smart, he'd get himself a sponsor and not listen to anybody else's fucking shit, only his sponsor. And when I heard that, I turned around, walked back in the meeting and see this guy there. It's the weirdest fucking guy in the place. He had all the earrings and all his ears and everything, and he dressed kind of weird. He was at the first meeting I went to, and I kind of liked what he had to say at that meeting. And he was only sober for a year at the time, but for some reason or other, I thought he was the only guy that was sober in the meeting. Everybody else was fucking lying. How could anybody have 5 years or 20 years of sobriety? So I walked up this guy and I asked him to be my sponsor. And he done the most amazing thing. He didn't say yes and he didn't say no. He took me up to the literature rack and he pulled out two pamphlets on sponsorship. He gave me one and he kept one and he said, I'm going to take this home and read it over. You take that one home and read it over and we'll meet tomorrow evening for coffee and we'll discuss it. I said, okay, fine. And he agreed to be my sponsor, and I agreed to have him, and he still is today, even though I don't talk to him very often. Anyway, right away, he got me to join the group. Then he got me active by being in the kitchen and stuff like that. Right? So anyway, I go on. My life changed drastically, right? I spent a lot more time with my kids and my family. I started to go back to school. I started off and take a little course at night school, and that ended up eventually a couple of years later. I went to college and done some studying at college, psychology, addictions, and mental health, and ended up through that getting a job through my union running an employee assistance program for them. And I was at that for over 20 years. Anyway, I also, after that, after I went to college, I went to two different places. One of them was a process of doing anger work, and the other one was Gestalt School of Toronto. And I went there for, I don't know, about 7 years part-time, learning about how to do counseling and stuff like that, and doing my own work. So anyway, after 20 years, I think I was about 19 years sober. My daughter was living with me at the time. My son was out on his own. And she moved out, got married and moved out. And I'm home alone. And now I had quit smoking pot when I was probably 6 or 7 months sober. I hadn't touched any. And I had a Tupperware full up in my cupboard that my brother had left there when he was visiting Nova Scotia. So I took that down one night and I said, I wonder what that'd be like now. And I rolled up a joint and I smoked it. And I smoked just about every day from then until last year. So anyway, I was out about 19 years sober, and then I was busy at other things, so I stopped doing stuff. Number one, I stopped going to my own group on Monday night. Number two, I stopped going to jails putting on AA meetings. I stopped going to the hospital putting on AA meetings. I stopped attending meetings where a lot of people knew me. I'd go to different parts of the city and go to different meetings. And I was 20 and a half years sober, and I was out with my wife and friend one night, and I ordered up a glass of wine. Now, shortly before that, I had a tobogganing accident, and I broke my back, and I was in bed for 3.5 months, and I was on some pretty heavy-duty painkillers. So it was fine. I was off of them by this time. I picked up the drink, and I was completely bankrupt inside, right? My will had died. I didn't have any will left to do the things that I needed to do. I didn't have the will to meditate. Didn't have the will to pick my literature up and start reading. So by this time, I was completely depleted from the benefits that I had gotten from attending meetings, talking my problems over with somebody else, sharing my story, stuff like that. I had stopped doing that. And therefore, I didn't have any energy left to do what I needed to do. So I returned to drink when the thought came to my mind. I just acted on it without even thinking about it. And that lasted a very short time, one weekend. And the funny thing is how quick things came back to me. That was a Friday night. A Saturday morning, I woke up and didn't have any money in my pocket. So I went to my wife's purse and I took a $10 bill and her credit card. And I went to the bar. Now, all I had to do was say, "Peg, you got any money?" And she'd give me whatever I wanted, right? Or she'd give me her bank card to go get something on it and that, right? But no, my old habit of sneaking around and stealing came back instantly. So I ended up at the bar, had a glass of wine, first glass of wine, on a Saturday morning around 11 o'clock, and drank all day Saturday, going to different bars. But the strangest thing was happening to me. I'd go into a bar, didn't know anybody there. I'd have a couple of drinks, and then I turned to look, and Ruben would be there, or Joe would be on the other side of me. They were AA members that I had known. They chased me around all day, right? Even the dead ones were there talking to me, right, in my head or whatever, but I could actually see them. So anyway, Monday morning, I was so sick, I didn't drink, and I tried to go to a meeting that night. But this time, like, all the fucking craziness came back to me, right? The insanity that I had ignored for the 20 years, right? I listened to people saying, "Oh, just turn it over. God will take care of it. Here, Jesus, take this one. I don't want it anymore," right? Stuff like that. And the whole time I was in AA, I tried to do it their way. I tried to pray. I even joined churches and done some stuff. And I enjoyed the one church I was in member for a couple of years. I really enjoyed it. There was no preaching at me in that. It was a unity church. As a matter of fact, the first day I went there was a Sunday, and this woman was up speaking at the pulpit. She was the minister. And she shared an event from her life from the Friday before. She said she had been to a certain street to see her counselor. And she was walking down the street, and all those voices were going off in her head, right? And I knew that very well. And she said, "I turned my eyes up in my head, and I said, 'Shut the fuck up.'" And she, you could hear a feather drop in that church that morning. Well, I bought into that right away, and it was a very active church. Along with going into jails and stuff with AA, I started going in with that group. And we didn't go in there and preach Jesus or the Bible. We went in there and we taught meditation. We taught massage. We taught different things that people had in the day. And we had a group of 14 prisoners. None of them was there to get out because every one of them was in for murder. And there were none of them eligible for parole for 25 years. So they were coming to the meeting because they wanted to. And I made such a difference in getting in an AA meeting in prison. Mostly you get people who were there because they wanted to get off the range or they wanted to impress somebody to get out. Anyway, I done that and I couldn't get it. There's no way could I believe in the God that they were talking about in AA, the ones that talked about it. I just couldn't get it because my early upbringing was Catholic. My mother was a staunch Catholic. My father didn't go to church at all. He stayed home. He seemed too sick to get out of bed from the booze. And my mother never preached to us. She never forced it on us. She let us find our own way once we got a certain age. Anyway, in catechism, we were studying about God, and they were talking about the death of Jesus on the cross. And that was fine. He died, he got buried, and they put a big rock in front of the tomb. And Sunday morning or the next day or whatever, the rock was gone. This is what the teacher was saying. And there was no human power could have removed that rock. Right? That's what she said. And I'm like 7 or 8 years old and I'm thinking, no human power could move that fucking rock. How in the fuck did he get it there in the first place? So I asked that question. I said, well, if no human power could remove it, how did he put it there in the first place? Well, what a fucking beating I got that day, right? And then that was going to call me an antichrister and two or three other fucking things and going to burn in hell and whatever. Anyway, there was no way I would buy into that shit. And anyway, now I'm in AA and I'm trying to hold a line, right? Because I'm afraid if I say what I really mean, what I really believe, which was nothing, then they were going to kick me out. Right. And early in my sobriety, I heard an atheist speak and he gave a damn good talk. And I was really impressed with him. And after the meeting, I was listening to people. They were criticizing him. I thought they were going to fucking take him out and hang him the way they were talking about him. Right. Because he didn't believe in God. So that scared me even more. I'm not saying nothing now. So I done all the do things in AA. I got sobriety in AA then. But I got it by doing common things. So let's talk a little bit about spirituality. Enough about fucking booze and stuff, right? I don't know what spirituality is, what other people's meanings to it and stuff is. But my meaning, when I say the word spirituality, when I hear it, what I basically mean is, as I said, so in the big book and several other literature places and everything, that having a psychic change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Well, I call it doing acts in my life to change my behavior. Doing little things that I need to do in order to feel good about myself, in order to stop hating people, in order to stop hating myself, and to strive to be of service to other people. That's what I believe spirituality to be. So my first spiritual experience in Alcoholics Anonymous was when I was a couple of months sober. And up to this point, I had gone to work every day and I fucking hated it. I hated AA. I hated that I had to go to those meetings. And I had a couple of guys at work. I fucking hated them because every day when I go back to work after lunch, there'd be two bottles of beer sitting on my machine and a joint rolled up for me. And I would fucking stay there all afternoon. I wouldn't touch them. I'd leave them there and I'd just do my work and leave them there. They'd disappear after the third break. Anyway, I hated those two guys and I hated every fucking thing about my life. And this night I'm at the meeting Everybody's gone. The meeting is over. I'm mopping the floor. And this is what's going on in my head. I'm such a fucking sucker. All those bastards are up to the bar somewhere now getting drunk. And I'm here like goddamn fool cleaning up after them. Mop, mop, go back and forth. And anyway, by the time I got the floor all mopped, the place put in order, I turned the key in the church door and I breathed a sigh of relief. That's over. And I went home. I went to the bathroom and I had a big shit. And that big shit to me was a spiritual experience. Because the moment I had it and relief come out of it, I had that same experience that I had when I drank first. That freedom of anger gone. I had a feeling of gratitude that I had another day over with. And the tension was gone out of my body. And I was constipated for that whole time, 3 months, and that I had a lot of trouble going to the bathroom, but this night I didn't. So my first spiritual experience was a pretty shitty one, and it was a good one. Anyway, as I went on with recovery and whatnot, I started to notice things about myself. I'm in a supermarket, and I'm in the lineup, and I'm cursing and swearing in my head at the cashier because she's so goddamn slow. And those people are just diddling-daddling. I get up to the cash, pay for it, and go out and go on crazy in my head. I'm fucking coming back here. And this day I'm in the lineup and that right, and I'm thinking, man, this is absolutely fucking crazy. I've got to do something to change this. I can't live like this. And I get up to the fucking cashier after 6 people front the line of me. And I turned around and I walked back to the end of the line. And I done that. And I start doing that frequently. I start doing it at the bank. I start doing it at grocery stores more often. And one day I decided, I don't have to do this anymore. This is my place in line. I'm going to claim it. Nobody getting ahead of me. And it just transformed by me taking action. It transformed that I had a right to be in that line. I had a right to not have to get out and go back and let somebody go ahead of me. And I didn't have a right to curse and swear at that cash register. And I didn't have a right to curse and swear and be ignorant to the people who were in front of me in line. Now, that might seem like a small, crazy thing, but that was life-changing for me. Because that attitude began to take over in other areas of my life. I began to have tolerance for other people. I began to have a much more serenity in my life. I was still fucking nuts, right? And there were times that would act out and work out, right? So anyway, after I had that first relapse, I came back to AA pretty short order. And I stayed in AA for another 12 years. But now it was completely different, right? I wasn't near as active as I was before, number one. I went to my own meeting. I went to a couple of other ones that I picked. And I didn't make a lot of friends. I mostly said to myself, if I was asked to do something, I'd do it. But I took care of my own group. I was active in my own group. That was basically it. I was also much more wary about people talking about God and stuff and standing away from them. And after 12 years of that, I moved from Toronto. I moved back to my hometown. And I started hanging out. So I'm still smoking pot, right? That whole time. Hanging out with the guys that I grew up with, going to the sheds and smoking weed and watching them drink. And after a while, I think, I'm not an alcoholic. If I was an alcoholic, I would have been drinking months ago, right? Stuff like that started to happen in my head. I'm not going to any meetings now. So anyway, I started to drink. And I remembered the piece in a big book where it says, if you're not convinced that you're an alcoholic, step up to the nearest bar. You can diagnose yourself. Have a few drinks. Try it more than once. Right? And you can diagnose yourself that way. So I would think of that every time I go drinking, I would think of that. And over about a year, maybe a year and a half, I was drinking that rate. My drinking began to increase. And then it comes down to one morning I'm walking home from an all-nighter about 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm staggering around the roads in my village and going home hoping nobody sees me. And then I start thinking about my old man again. How many times had I met him on the road that he could hardly stand up, drunk and staggering around going home when I'm on my way to school and stuff, right? Holy fuck, what am I doing to myself? Shortly after that, I began to think about the AA again. I began to think about, you know, I think I am an alcoholic, right? You know, it's I don't seem to be able to stop for very long. Every time I start feeling worried or scared, I run to the bottle. So on my 70th birthday, I went out for dinner with my wife and my sister, and I ordered up a double whiskey, and I said, cheers, guys, this is my last drink, and I took it, and that was my last drink. Shortly after that, I decided that wasn't good enough just to quit drinking. I had to take some action in my life, and I decided to go for treatment, and I did. I ended up getting in treatment a couple of months later, and it was the best thing that happened to me in my life. Because number one, they weren't preaching AA to me. They weren't preaching God to me. They were using a psychological approach. I got a dual diagnosis. I got the proper assessment for my mental health, which was pretty bad. I got diagnosed with several things, as a matter of fact, but the most important one was post-traumatic stress disorder. And it really fit. And attached to that program was the most amazing aftercare program you could ever get. I got to see a psychologist on a weekly basis. I had 2 online meetings a week at her aftercare. One of them was a discussion one. And I got involved in a trauma program, 14-week trauma program, a couple of hours a week, going over to, I think there was 14 of us in the group. And that really, really helped me accept myself. It helped me look at and understand the nature of my mental illness and what caused it. And it also helped me understand all the psychological stuff that I'd been reading and studying over the years and how to apply it to myself. So that really, really changed my life. And then I started attending AA. I found online Zoom with secular meetings, and I really, really took to it like a duck to water. I like what happens here. I like the way people share, and I like that they don't. The majority of people in secular AA are not putting down mainstream AA. They're not putting down people because they believe in God. They're basically sharing their own experience, strength, and hope with all of us, that they may recover and that we may recover from alcoholism without having to believe in some dogma bullshit or something that somebody else believes in. And we can do that. Basically, the most of us can do that without having to shit all over somebody else because they have a different belief. And I really, really like that. Anyway, I think that brings me pretty close to an ending of my talk. It seems like I'm drying up here. I really appreciate, Mark, you asked me to come and speak today. I hope somebody got something out of what I had to say. And I thank you all very, very much for my sobriety. Thank you.